Even just talking about 90 Day, I remember being approached by the network saying, we'd like for you to do the show. I had never heard of the show. And so I said, you know, send me some clips. And they sent me some clips. I was like, okay, this will be on for a season or two.
I'm Gabriella Tavakoli-Bailey, and I've worked in unscripted television as an executive producer and TV executive doing what I love most, storytelling. I'm an extremely curious person, and I decided to do this podcast so I can dig in and learn about fascinating people living extraordinary lives. And I called up my very talented friend, Aurélie Minazad, who is a writer and journalist, and together we are going to learn about people's journeys and provide you with a fun listen and a good time. Welcome to Tell Us Something We Don't Know. Our incredible guest today is Sean Robinson. Sean is an award-winning journalist, television host, author, producer, actress, and philanthropist. Sean is also familiar to millions of dedicated fans as host of the tell-all episodes of worldwide mega-hit franchise 90 Day Fiancé on TLC and Discovery Plus. And before that, she was the host of Access Hollywood for 16 years. So she's a very familiar face to all of you. Sean, hi!
Hello. It is so wonderful to be with you ladies today.
It's so good to have you.
You look stunning as always, Sean.
Thank you. My mother actually gave me this sweater.
Oh.
And like every time she gives me something, she's like, oh, I know you're not going to wear it. I was like, oh, no, Mom, I'm going to wear this one.
What we see is like a beautiful, bright red top with a little peekaboo in the opening, but it's still modest, professional, but has a little flair to it, I guess you would say.
Thank you.
Everybody, I think, knows you as the face of 90 Day Fiancé, the franchise which you've been a part of for so many years. You know, Sean, you and I have known each other for, I mean, close to 10 years, I feel like,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Wow, time has flown.
I know, right? And we are going to talk all about 90 Day Fiancé because I know the fans can't get enough of that. And we're going to be asking you all the juicy questions. But before that, we want to really get to know you. And I feel like there's so much that you have done, that you have accomplished. And, you know, I feel like you've also made such a big impact. And so we're going to get into all that.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Great.
So you were born in Detroit, right?
Detroit, Michigan. Yep. Midwest gal. Born and raised in the city of Detroit. Yeah. My mother worked for the city water department and my father worked for the city health department. And so we had, you know, working middle class family back then. Middle class was definitely different than it is today, obviously, you know. But yeah, growing up in Detroit, Michigan, the Motor City capital of the world, Motown, a city rich in history. It really impacted the person I am today. And I just always love going back home. Even though I've lived in LA and many other cities throughout my career, I always think of Detroit as home.
And what kind of kid were you?
My parents got divorced when I was 6 years old. And then my mom and I went to live with my grandmother. But, you know, my father and my mother were still very close and I would be over my dad's house. I'd be over my mom's house. I'd be over my step parents' house, my grandparents' house. And so I was raised really by a village of amazing people, my parents, my grandparents, my step parents. So, yeah, I think I was always a little creative as a child, sometimes rebellious as a child.
I cannot see you being rebellious.
Oh, yes, absolutely. My mother told me the story. I was a little baby. She and my dad were feeding me. They had the food on the spoon and they were teasing me. They would go up to my mouth. And then as soon as I opened my mouth, they pull it away. You know, and they're, you know, they were laughing and then they did it one more time and I opened my mouth to get the food and they turned it away. Then they put the spoon to my mouth the third time and I turned my head like, I don't want it then, you know? So I know, I was like,
mind of your own.
To me.
Yeah. Right.
So
I love it. Even at like 7 months.
Yes. Right. Right.
So you were an only child.
No, I have a family of brothers and sisters and half brothers and half sisters. And growing up, I had an older brother who passed away many years ago. I
I'm
have,
sorry.
thank you. I have two stepsisters, a half sister, half brother, but we don't call each other steps and halves.
Yeah.
We're just all brothers and sisters.
Oh man, they must be so proud of you, though.
They are. My father, who I was very, very close to, he got a chance to see my work on Access Hollywood. So back then, it was a national show in the true sense of what a national show was at that time, because before I was just in local news. And when I got to Access Hollywood, my parents were eight in 1999, before social media, Twitter, Facebook, all that. And then they had a chance to see me on a national show was really very, very cool. They knew all their hard work, blood, sweat, and tears had paid off, and how much work I had done. I was very blessed to be able to share that experience with them.
Did they ever call you and say, I have some tips for you. You should say this, you should wear this, you should, because I feel like parents, as proud as they are, they're always like still trying to look out for you or give advice.
Yes. My father, he wasn't really into entertainment shows. He just watched because his daughter was on one, so he would just say, "Oh yeah, baby, you look nice," and might remark about some interview. My mom would ask me about what the stars were like, and she was like, "Oh, you look really nice today." And so that was like, that was nice. But yes, mom was always like, "Okay, I'm not sure I like your hair that way. Maybe you should wear like bangs or not wear bangs." I'm like, "Thanks, mom. Okay." So yes, always. And she does that to this day.
No, they keep it real forever,
Yes.
parents.
Oh, forever and ever, right? All right. So then, when you're in high school, was that the point where you started wanting to go into journalism, or at what point was it? What was high school Sean like?
Well, even before high school, actually, when I entered high school, when I went into ninth grade, I was 14 years old, went to Cass Tech. A lot of people know Cass Tech because it's like this famous high school. A number of like people like Dinah Ross graduated from Cass Tech.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we have a lot of people who are in the entertainment business that graduated from Cass. Cass was a magnet school, so you had to have a certain grade point average to get into Cass. Otherwise, I would have gone to a high school that was in my neighborhood. McCass was in downtown Detroit, and I started, I think it was actually the summer before I went to Cass, my mom enrolled me in a group called the Team Players. And so we would go, we were like this little group, we would go around to like different like nursing homes and schools, and we would perform. We would perform plays like, get a job, have a good attitude, things like that, messages that young kids would want to know. And then, we would go to the nursing homes and sing for them. I can't sing a lick, but when I was surrounded by, 10 other people, my voice didn't sound that bad. So Cass, as I said, was a, it was like a college preparatory school where we had to pick curriculums. So my curriculum was performing arts. You can be in engineering, you could be in science, you could whatever. But my curriculum was performing arts. So there was a heavy emphasis on English. We did a number of plays in performing arts. It focused on us as performers. So that was part of feeling like, oh, maybe this is something that I could do for a living, for a long time. So I was really excited about being a part of that curriculum. And then after I graduated from high school, I went to Spelman College in Atlanta. Spelman College is a liberal arts school. And so I was an English major at mass communications minor. I took my communications classes at Clark College, which was across the street. And so while I was at Spelman, I was chosen to host a talk show on cable channel 17, I think it was. And it wasn't cable the way, we're not talking about HBO cable, we're talking about Wayne's World cable. And then in between my junior and senior year, and after I graduated, when I came home to Detroit, I worked at a small independent station in Detroit called WGPR TV, Channel 62. It was a very small independent station. And that's where I learned how to write, report, and edit. And what was an advantage for me is that I was in a large television market, because at the time, Detroit was, I think, the seventh largest television market. But since I was at a small station, I was still covering the same stories as the larger stations on the ABCs, the NBCs, the CBSs in Detroit. So that was an advantage. And so after 4.5 years there, I was hosting a talk show called Strictly Speaking. I created this talk show, and I was also, as I said, reporting and anchoring. And then I went to Flint, Michigan, to the CBS affiliate in Flint, Michigan. And I was there for 2.5 months before the news director told me the TV thing was not for me and maybe I should think about doing
what?
Something else. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait a
wow.
second.
Yeah.
Based on what? What was the reasoning?
You know, I'm trying to remember. I think he just didn't see me as having a future in TV.
Wow.
You know, when I think about that,
yeah.
You know, we were covering stories that were relevant to Flint, Michigan at the time. You know, what I tell young people a lot of times when I do public appearances and or young people ask me for advice, I always say there will always be people who don't see your worth. Mm. There will be people who think that you're not good enough. And so fortunately, I did not let that deter me. At the time, there were a couple broadcasting magazines. Mm-hmm. And in the back of the magazines, it would have job listings. And one of the job listings was health reporter for the ABC affiliate in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So I called the number and they flew me out for an interview and I got the job. I was a medical reporter. They called it medical/health reporter back then. I didn't know anything about medicine, but they wanted somebody who could explain medical information. Mm-hmm. So that everybody could understand it. And so I was there for 4.5 years, probably a little bit longer than I should have been.
But going back real quick, though, so to this guy who basically told you that you weren't cutting it.
Yes.
I mean, that's amazing that you didn't let him stop you. But I do think that those moments are so important. Did it really not affect you at all? Because that could have really stopped your trajectory, right? Because what people do say can affect, especially when you're, you know what, at that time you were 20?
No, I was a little older than that. Yeah, I was probably like at my mid-20s. So let me go back. My world before I actually went to this television station in Flint, I was raised in a neighborhood that was predominantly African-American. Mm-hmm. My high school, which was this magnet school at the time that I went, was, if not 50% African-American, probably more at that time, it could have been 60%. Then I went to Spelman College, which is an historically Black college. Then the television station that I worked at, it was a Black-owned television station, okay? So the people that worked there was predominantly African-American. So my world had been one of seeing Black excellence, okay? I grew up with people who excelled in many different areas, okay? I grew up with people who owned businesses, people who were anchoring the news. There were Black doctors. We had teachers that looked like us in high school that told us we could achieve anything we wanted to achieve. Number one, we got into a school that many people couldn't even get into.
Right.
My point is that Flint station that I worked at was the first time that somebody told me that they didn't think I had talent. So that did not even register with me.
I see.
Because of where I had come from. Okay.
Right.
So where I come from, where I graduated from, where the work I have done, all of that. It was the first time that I was in a predominantly white environment, you know, and so I was thinking this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Mm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's great, because so many experiences are the opposite, where you don't grow up like that, seeing yourself, especially like if you're a woman of color.
Yes.
You know, right. In that kind of environment. So you had already established yourself as a very confident and capable person by the time you got to that guy. So you were like, no, you're not meant for this job.
Right. And so that kind of rebellious attitude that I talked about as even having that as a baby. Okay.
Right.
I was like, okay, if that's what you think. And I'm still that kind of person even today, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do I remember many no's? Do I remember many people telling me I couldn't do it? Or not only that I couldn't do it, but that they didn't want me to do it. Yeah. And that's why I think it is so important for girls to see themselves and to know that they can achieve something despite what anybody else says.
Yeah, because you're the founder and president of the Shawn Foundation for Girls, right? It's a nonprofit which supports the empowerment of girls in five key areas.
Yes.
STEM, health, arts, unity, and neighborhoods.
Yes.
And before that, you wrote a book about girls and self-esteem, which was the kind of impetus of you starting your foundation, right?
I had long been in the girls' empowerment space. I first served on the National Board of Girls, Inc., which is a national girls empowerment organization. I wrote my book on girls and self-esteem in 2009, and it's called Exactly As I Am. And it's the collected wisdom of women like Oprah Winfrey. I talked to so many people, Janet Jackson, Iman, Nancy Pelosi. I remember talking to Sharon Stone, Diane von Furstenberg, a lot of women for this book that I wrote. And I talked to girls about what are the challenges to their own self-esteem, what things make them feel good about themselves, what makes them feel bad about themselves, and what can we as adults learn to help make this path for our girls easier. Fast forward in 2015, after I left Access Hollywood, I thought about, okay, what do I want to do in this additional chapter of my life? And I come from a family of philanthropists. And I'm not talking about the philanthropists who are, you know, rich and have a lot of money, because my family didn't, but they give up their time. They give up their time and their energy, and they always have. And so I started my nonprofit, the Shawn Foundation for Girls. As you mentioned, we focus on five key areas by the acronym of my name, S-H-A-U-N. So S is STEM, H is health, A is arts, U is unity, and N is neighborhoods. And I thought, how can I best help? Okay, how can I help the empowerment of girls? And I realized that I could be most effective if I am helping the people who are not trying to reinvent the wheel. A lot of people say, oh, I want to work with your girls. And we don't work directly with girls. We work with the organizations that work directly with girls. So I am helping the people, the boots on the ground, the soldiers out on the front lines, the people that are experts and who know about what our girls need. I help by giving these organizations grants for their capacity building, for their projects, for their programs, so that they can become stronger in their ability to help the girls that they serve in their communities. That's what the Shawn Foundation for Girls does.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Going back to that guy just really quickly that said things that I truly believe, like, don't ever say that to somebody. You
it's
know?
So funny. I think you and I both can't get enough of going back to that guy, because I have so many questions
right? People like that bother me so much. But have you tracked him down?
And slashed his tire.
And been like, ha ha, look at me now.
Listen. When I think about the craziest, most egregious things done or said to me in the workplace, that doesn't even rank in the top 10.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. What does, Shawn?
Yeah, what does?
We got the Me Too movement. I mean, that kind of stuff right there. That's what you think, let's clean all that stuff up, you know? Yeah. So yeah, it doesn't even, yeah.
Well, I'm curious if that experience made it click for you that, oh, this is going to be a little bit harder than I thought. Because you mentioned that it's not only that you can't do it, it's that I don't want you to do this. So did you come across a lot of people?
Yes, like in my career, because I worked in a number of different television markets. After I left, I was in Flint, Michigan for the 2.5 months. I went to Milwaukee with the ABC affiliate, where I was a medical reporter and then ended up hosting a talk show and then being weekend anchor. I was there for 4.5 years, then went to Austin, Texas for a year. I was at the new CBS affiliate in Austin, Texas. We started this new station. And then I was at the Fox affiliate in Miami for 2.5 years. And so it was in Miami that Access Hollywood saw a tape. And back then it was a tape. They saw a tape of mine and then flew me out for an interview. So I've been in a number of different television markets. That's where I've honed my skills as a journalist.
So how was it getting the gig for Access Hollywood? Was that like a dream come true for you?
Yes, it was. I remember saying, I want to be on a show like Entertainment Tonight. That's what I would always say. And I got told so many times by well-meaning people, oh, you know, there aren't that many jobs for Black women like that. Don't aspire to just stay in local news. There are more opportunities. I had agents tell me that. I had well-meaning colleagues to tell me that. So it was something that I would say all the time at first. And then I had agents say, oh, we're not going to represent you if you just want to be on an entertainment show, because there weren't a lot of opportunities and they didn't want to just kind of hang their hat on the fact that this is the only thing I wanted to do.
Right.
So yeah, that was challenging. But once again, I kept at it. I kept editing tapes together. I kept sending them to like headhunting firms and just tell them, you know, what I was interested in. Yeah. I mean, I was super, super excited. I remember the day that the agent, it was funny because the agent that was representing me at the time isn't the one that got me the job. I had been tapes on the side, and then the show found out who my agent was and they called him, and then he called me and said, hey, guess what I got you? I'm like, you ain't give me nothing. Okay. So I was very, very excited.
Were you nervous about all the big name celebrities you had to interview? Or
yeah, like I remember being on the red carpet at the Oscars for the very first time. I just couldn't believe it. Here it is. I'm a little girl from Detroit, Michigan, and I'm here in Hollywood with the lights and one of the very few Black faces on the red carpet. Very, very few. It was really, really different. It was thrilling. It was challenging. I felt like I was ready. I felt like I could definitely handle it. There were certain crazy things. If you watch any kind of drama about television news, there are always some crazy, crazy things that happen.
Give us an example.
Well, like I said before, the Me Too movement. I mean, you could have done a story on that at Access Hollywood. So yes, yes.
I'm not
so, you know, things
to
like
hear
that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. It's funny that you say, you know, there wasn't a lot of African-American faces back then or in the red carpet. And it's crazy because it's not that long ago.
No, it's not.
I mean, do you think it's getting better? It's changing.
Oh, absolutely.
They're diversifying. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes. You can see many more faces of color on the red carpet. It's wonderful. You know, just when you turn on the TV, like I just remember growing up, I was at this Black owned station in Detroit, but any other station in that market, they didn't have two Black people anchoring at one time. Never, ever.
Yeah, right. Right.
That just wasn't even something that they would even think about.
Consider, yeah.
I remember, I will never forget, my colleague, Nancy O'Dell, hosted the Rose Parade with Al Roker from the Today Show every year. And then one New Year's Eve, I got a call from NBC and they said, Nancy has laryngitis. Can you fill in? Because they knew I could fill in for her because I always filled in for her when I was at Access Hollywood. And I was like, okay. And they gave me the clothes she was supposed to wear. They gave me the clothes she was supposed to wear. They had the makeup artist, the hairstylist who was supposed to do her hair.
Did they give you Al Roker too? Or
Al Roker. Okay. And I remember, so I'm anchoring the Rose Parade with Al Roker. I got so many calls about people like emails. Oh my God, two Black people. Oh
wow.
My God. I got, you know, yes, yes.
Did you get those calls from Black people?
Yes.
Like being excited. Okay.
Totally. I see. Right. Yeah. And so I remember, I even think Al Roker probably made a comment about it. I think if I remember correctly, I remember him saying something when we started the broadcast, something like, I don't know, you don't have to color correct your TV or you don't have to adjust your TV or something like that. He said, made a reference to it. Yeah.
I love that. It's so funny. I think it's like there's a cultural things like between minorities that I think other people don't get. Like Gabriella, you and I would probably text each other if two Persians were hosting something or even one, you know, because we get it. We notice it.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, when Britney Spears got a Persian boyfriend, we were on top of it. But you don't know anybody else. So I totally get that.
That's
you getting
funny.
Phone calls when, you know, your own people see the two of you on screen together.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very, very funny.
So 16 years that you spent at Access Hollywood, that's a really long time to be
Very long
somewhere,
time.
right? And before we kind of talk about the shift into your next chapter after that, what was your personal life like? You're juggling a lot of hats, and you've always been very clearly career oriented, but were you in any relationships? What was your personal life like?
You know what? I always say, I remember asking, I was in an interview one time with, was it Scarlett Johansson? It could have been Scarlett Johansson. And I remember somebody before the interview, maybe it was another show, had asked her, how do you juggle it all with your career and a relationship? And she said, how come men don't ever get answered that question? Like, how come men, Tom Cruise, how do you balance it all, with the career and the relationship? Harrison Ford, how do you do it? Juggling a career and then a relationship. And so, it's always funny when people ask me about that. And I don't see one as preventing the other. I don't see working hard as preventing one having a satisfying relationship. So I never found that to be a challenge, like, oh, I'm working so hard, blah, blah, blah. I've never had that issue.
Yeah, and I would just say I would ask that of men and of women. I think that in any career that has you traveling or time consuming, and I
Demanding.
can speak for myself, you prioritize. I hear you. I know exactly that question. I remember hearing it myself, but I personally don't think it's a man or woman thing because I would ask a man the same exact question. But I'm just curious. I think I'm more being a little nosy about your personal life, Sean.
Right.
Let's be real.
So, yeah. And so that's really what they're
That's
saying.
really
That's
what they're
really how do you balance it
saying.
all? Tell us about, so, okay. So, what's the question? What is the
It's
question?
who's at your house right now? Who's making you breakfast? Let's just get to it, you guys. You've known each other for 10 years
The
already.
chef.
So,
The chef is
the
making
private chef,
breakfast.
the private topless chef she's hired.
Private topless chef is
Oh my
good
God.
for you, Sean. Yeah, private topless chef. There are certain celebrities in Hollywood that are married and have children, and you never hear them, you never see them walk the red carpet with their husband. You never see them talk about them, that part of their life out of the public eye. Now, it's funny because I have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful group of girlfriends here in LA. And whenever ever we're at brunch or whatever, they're like, oh, Sean, what, who you know? They were like, why don't you ever talk? I said, because I don't want to be like you talking about five different guys who you've just broken up with. Because you told us about at the last dinner, you're not with them anymore. And then the one you told us about at the dinner before that, you're not with that person anymore either. Because I don't want to be having those kinds of conversations. So
Very
you will get
pointless
a wedding
conversation.
invitation with the person's name on it when I want you to know. That's what I tell them.
It's so funny. I agree with you. And I actually have male friends who are like that. It's like, I do not want to go to dinner with another girlfriend that is exactly like the one you had before, just for you guys to break up the next day. I don't have time for that. Please. Exactly. Let me know when you're engaged and I will be there for you. But girlfriends do that. They want to know what's exciting in your life.
So in general, though, because I mean, obviously you're an actress as well. I mean, you wear a bunch of different hats, but would you say that being on our show and being the person answering the questions, not asking, do you like it? Is it difficult? Do you feel like you find yourself at times wanting to, let's talk about you, and switch it?
No, I've done enough
I
interviews.
was gonna say, I think she's
I've
asked
done enough
enough questions.
interviews. I enjoy being on this side and I still do interviews, but as you know, I still don't do interviews. But yeah, no, I don't. I just look at, once again, I don't look at this as the next chapter. I look at it as an additional chapter. I mean, even just talking about 90 Day, I remember being, and Gabby, you were there. I remember being approached by the network saying, we'd like for you to do the show. I had never heard of the show. And so I said, send me some clips. And they sent me some clips. I was like, okay, this will be on for a season or two and I'll wrap this up. And then they kept adding shows and after I was like, oh, what? See it all around the world? Really? It's like saying yes to things that you might not have said yes to and experiencing something new and something different. That's what that has been, you know, my stint at 90 Day Fiance, just something new and different and something I didn't know was coming. And it's something I sure enjoy. And I enjoy learning about all the different countries that the show is seen in because I get all these DMs from, I don't know, Sweden, Italy, Spain. I mean, just all over the world. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah, I love the fact that you are like, yep, this thing's not going to be on for too long. And then, actually, before we go, let's go into 90 Day. Why don't you just tell everybody what is 90 Day Fiance? For those two people that have not watched the show or the franchise, give it to us in a nutshell.
If you go overseas, let's say you go to Italy or Spain or Russia, and you meet the love of your life and you want to bring them back to the States, you have to apply. It's the law for what's called a K-1 visa. And you have to pay for this visa. And then once the visa is granted and your significant other lands on soil here in the US, you have 90 days in which to get married. And if you don't get married, they have to go back to their native country. And you can imagine all of the, in that short amount of time, all of the drama that would happen, getting used to a new culture, getting used to family members who think that you're just there for a green card and learning a new language. I mean, all of this stuff. That's what 90 Day Fiance is. That's the premise of the show. And it's got, I don't know how many spinoffs, Before the 90 Days, Happily Ever After, The Other Way, Pillow Talk. They've got tons of spinoffs. I remember being in the airport lounge early in the morning. It was like 5:30 in the morning. And there was this gentleman, very conservative looking gentleman. He had a newspaper. I think it was reading like the Wall Street Journal or whatever. And I was talking to one of the servers in the lounge, and he peeks over his newspaper and he said, "Excuse me, your voice sounds familiar." And I said, "Oh," I said, "maybe, I don't know, Access Hollywood." I said, No. He says, "No." He said, "Are you a 90 Day Fiance?" And I was like, "Oh my God, yeah." I said, "You watch the show?" He said, "Yeah, my wife and I watch it." I said, "Tell me why you like it so much." He said, "It's just the universal theme of wanting to be loved." He said, "Everybody wants
Oh,
to be loved.
yeah.
People will go through just to have that feeling of love."
That's so true. Yep.
Then things get wild and
Yeah.
crazy. Folks
That's
start
such
arguing.
a profound exchange in an airport at 5:30 in the morning. Wow.
Yeah, I feel like the show, I'll say just real quick from, when I first saw the sizzle and it came in. And for me, I just immediately knew that it was magic because it had so many different layers to it. First and foremost, love. And I think that's what drives me and what I'm passionate about. It's a great love story. But I think the visa component, for me personally, being Persian, I mean, I was born here in the US, but a lot of my family is in Iran and trying to come to America and what they would do to try to make that happen. And so it's complicated. And so for me, I connected with it. And I can go on and on about how incredible Sean is because you connect with those people on the couch. And side note, the stamina that Sean has, I've never seen anybody in my entire life be so professional and just keep on going. But also, when the cameras, when we go to break, you're connected with them. You're asking questions. You're in it. You're doing the OMG, everything. Like, and I feel like that's why people open up to you. So I think people want to know what was the most like holy shit moment when you're sitting there, and I'm sure there's 100, but what are some moments that stand out for you?
So when Muhammad gave Danielle the divorce papers or the annulment papers on set, I was like, oh my gosh, because that was really kind of early on and something like that had never happened before. And so I was like, oh my gosh, that one was a big one for me. And you know what's interesting about the show is when we first started, the cast wasn't really on social media, and now their lives are just played out on social media. So that becomes a part of the conversation. Like every time I think there's a couple, I was like, oh my God, we're not going to top this couple. Somebody else comes along and you're like, oh my goodness. And yeah. And you know, people ask me all the time, they're like, is that real? I was like, yes, it is real. There have even been times when I said, this can't be real. And then you talk to them, you find out it's real.
Do you sometimes have to rein in your own reaction? Like you want to react very differently than you actually are because you're like, oh, wait, I'm on TV. I have to be professional.
Well, my reactions have become like just part of the show because right. people are like, oh, my God, your reaction is so funny.
Yeah.
I'm just like literally thinking, I can't believe they just said that or did that. I don't know what's happening right now.
Were you ever stumped and you're like, I don't know how to follow that up?
Well, there are like so many, oh my goodness, moments.
Right. Yeah.
So many.
And Sean, ahead of time, right? Before you tape a tell-all, you're watching all of the episodes.
Yes.
Like
right.
you get into it, right?
Yes, yes, yes. The way I watch the show is the producers will send me all of the episodes. So I'm watching them all. I kind of get to binge watch all of the episodes. My mouth just drops open. I was like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, they're really going to come on the show? Okay. All right. You know.
I'm going to kind of spew out some things that come to my mind, right? David and Lana. Remember them?
Well, first of all, I didn't think Lana was real.
I don't think anyone did.
Yeah. I said, this woman is not real. I said, she's not real. And then the episode where she walks into the camera, I'm like, oh my God, she's real. I cannot believe she's right. I said, she is actually real. That was an oh my goodness moment because I did not think there was actually a Lana and there was.
What was it like for you meeting Big Ed for the first time?
Big Ed, man, I'm telling you. You know, Big Ed, you know, he's got some things to work on. He can be very, very charming and he can be very funny. He does have a side to him that he definitely needs to work on when it comes to relationships. And so for that reason, I'm going to, you know, say I like Big Ed, but Big Ed, you got to step it up when it comes to treating women with respect. You got to step it up, buddy.
Yep.
I mean, after all these interviews, all these very different relationships, are you jaded now or do you feel like you've learned something from them or
well, what
do you feel
I
like
do,
you could write a book?
What I do learn is that just talk about stuff beforehand. Right. I mean, some folks aren't having basic conversations like, do you want kids or do you not want kids? You know, are we going to practice Christmas? Are we going to live in this state or that state?
Yeah.
Is our mother going to live in the same house with that? Like,
oh gosh.
Some of these people don't even talk about just basic stuff. And so I think you got to get all that stuff out on the table beforehand.
It's funny because it seems obvious, but a lot of people don't do it. You're absolutely right. And I think they think that if they're in love, those are not romantic yeah. things to talk about. That love will just make everything work. And as somebody who's been married for 10 years, no, it does not. Please talk about it.
You got to talk about that stuff.
100%.
All right. So Pedro and Chantel.
Okay. Pedro and Chantel, I really liked them as a couple. I was really sad when they broke up. But the family issues that they had, I don't know what the alternative was because they had some really, really bad family issues. Seems like he's starting his life over and, you know, we wish him luck, but I was really sad about that because I thought they were adorable.
I'm with you. I really rooted for them. I mean, obviously there is that infamous moment, the pulling the weave out and the fight with the sister and everything. There were many moments with them.
That didn't happen in studio, but that was the craziest thing. Mm-hmm. When that family got into the fight, I've just never seen a fight like that before. Somebody was, who was it holding the track of hair? Was it the mother?
Mom. Karen.
Oh, was Karen. Pedro's sister's hair, and she was shouting in her very interesting Spanish, you know, about the police. And that was nuts. absolutely nuts. I'm glad that fight was broken up as quickly as it could have been, because it would have been really, really bad.
Yeah, and that was very much real when we're playing back the clips and everything, and you're seeing Chantel and Pedro's face reacting to that. They are not laughing. That was very much their life, and it was a lot of tension. And I was so sad when they didn't make it as a couple, but hopefully they will both just move on.
Yeah, I hope they'll be happy, whatever they decide to do. But that was very sad.
So, Sean, who is your favorite couple of all time?
They're kind of like all my children. You don't want to pick your favorite. David and Annie are funny. There are certain people that I think are really kind of funny to watch. I like some people who are couples. I don't think they should be a couple, but I like them individually.
Individually, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Let's go into rapid fire questions.
Okay.
Are you ready for rapid fire, Sean?
I'm ready for rapid fire.
All right. What a lot of people don't know about me is?
I've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show 16 times.
Oh my God.
Jeez. Favorite hobby?
Favorite hobby is actually working on my foundation. That's my favorite hobby.
What's the first thing you do when you wake up?
I say, thank you, Lord, for waking me up.
Oh, I love that. Who in your life sees you the way you would like everyone to see you?
I would say me.
I like that.
Yeah.
What was something your mom or dad said that was right?
Dad said, take it little by little, baby. Meaning when I'm overwhelmed, just break things up into small pieces and tackle them little by little.
What do you splurge on yourself?
Massages.
Nice.
I love to get massages. Foot massage, body massage.
Foot massages are the best.
Yeah.
So you are also an actress. Who are you dying to co-star with in a movie?
Viola Davis.
Ah, yes. Oh,
that's a good one.
I can see that. I can see that. Guilty pleasure show or movie you cannot get enough of?
Well, other than 90 Day Fiancé, I just started getting into White Lotus.
Oh, I just started season two, Sean. You're on season one.
Well, actually, I have not seen season one. My friends told me that I can jump into season two.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that true?
Maybe that's where I'll start.
I think, yes, that's fine. But I loved season one. And,
okay. You
know, I literally started watching season two, episode one last night. And I just, oh, it's so good. If Santa was real, what would you ask for?
Santa is real. Peace on earth and goodwill to all men and women.
Actor, host, journalist, philanthropist. If you had to pick one forever, which one would it be?
Philanthropist.
Favorite place you've visited in the world?
South Africa.
Funniest rumor you have ever heard about yourself?
Funniest rumor. Oh, I know. Funniest rumor that I've heard about myself. You must not eat.
Oh.
You're just blessed.
You just don't know.
I say that to Gabriella all the time.
Oh, God, please. Skincare routine. Any magical potion you know about that you'd like to share, Sean?
Yes.
Please send links.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Take your makeup off at night. Don't smoke and don't drink.
Ever? That's going to ruffle some feathers.
I don't drink. I don't smoke. And I take my makeup off at night. That's what I get from my mom.
And what's the face cream you use?
So I used to use a line called Beauty Control that my grandmother and my mother used to sell.
Yeah.
And then the company actually went out of business. I have to use very, very gentle products on my skin. Very gentle. No harsh scrubs. I'll get all this stuff in gift bags and I'll just give it away because I can't have anything strong on my skin at all. So everything has to be like super sensitive for sensitive skin.
I will say just one little thing. Even after our like insane days of shooting, I mean, Sean, you are so stunning and flawless. And even at the very end of the day, it's just perfection.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for sharing your skincare routine. All right, last question. The best advice you've ever been given?
Best advice that I have ever been given is that from my family. It is, if God gives you a platform, use it to give back. And that's what I'm trying to do.
And you do that so successfully. So, Sean, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me on SeanRobinson.com. That's my website. They can find me on Ms. Sean Robinson on Instagram and Sean Robinson on Facebook. I just started TikTok. I just started. I don't have any followers on TikTok. So
we'll follow you. Don't worry.
And what's something that's coming up that you're excited about that everybody should check out?
So we're starting to work on our fifth movie on Lifetime, Seven Deadly Sins. We've done Lust, Envy, Greed, and Wrath, and now we're working on Pride. We're just starting to get that going, and we're picking our cast, which is really fun.
I love it. Like Orly said in the beginning, I don't know how you do it all. And just thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sean. It was so nice to talk to you and to meet
thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Tell Us Something We Don't Know. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at TUSWDK or email us at info@tellussomethingwedontknow.com. Audio and editing by Simon Greffenstedt and theme music provided by Signature Tracks.